Great. Well, I know you're really busy. We'll try to keep it really short.
Okay. I mean, let's talk as much as we need. What happened to the original program? It never aired nationally?
It hasn't. There's still a chance that it would.
Oh.
What happened was it ended up being difficult to edit down. Do you want to call when it's like when it's in galleys or something?
I'll have them send it to you.
That's fine. Okay, that's terrific. Really good. Okay, we're gonna roll tape now.
Okay.
And we're gonna rebroadcast the hour interview and use this as
an update.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Good. How long had it been since you were last to Chile?
Well, I went back in December 1985, and I left precisely on July 4th, 1986.
Were you observed during this last few months that you were down there?
By observed, you mean what?
Observed by soldiers or by the police, by representatives of the government.
People were not following me. In other words, I was not picked out or singled out for concrete repression. People did not call up my phone to intimidate me. They did not follow me. They did not beat me up because I was myself. I did, however, have a couple of run-ins, myself and my family, with the police and with the soldiers. But those are the run-ins that everybody lives just because they happen to live on the streets of Chile. I was beaten up very savagely by a group of soldiers one night in a plaza that I had gone with some young kids to see Halley's Comet. I speak about this in the New York Times Sunday Magazine article, which I wrote a couple of weeks ago. In other words, I had gone down to the plaza. We went to see the Halley's Comet because supposedly, according to rumors in Santiago, this comet, having taken Marcos and Duvalier, was now about to take Pinochet as well. So we're going to say goodbye to Pinochet. You know, it was a joke. But the police didn't think it was a joke, and the soldiers beat us up. So that was my worst encounter. My wife at this moment is sick. She's got an abscess in her throat because she was tear gassed on two occasions very, very strongly. And some of that stuff is poisonous. My eldest son was beaten by police in the middle of the center, et cetera, et cetera. I would say the only one who hasn't suffered so far is the youngest one of seven. We don't let him onto the streets.
How do you feel as a father when your young son... How old is your son?
My 19-year-old.
Yeah, how do you feel about him... Was he participating in a demonstration or anything when he got beat up?
Sure. Yeah, I was here in the States when that happened. Well, you know, I had two very conflicting emotions. One is a fear that something should happen to him. And the other, you know, I just can't say it, but, well, I mean, I don't know. I'll say it. I felt proud of him. You know, proud that he sees injustice and he goes into the streets and he protests that he's not staying in his home. That's the sort of young man I want my son to be. I don't want to give him his political ideas. I don't want him to parrot mine. I want him to be a full-grown, beautiful, decent human being that when he sees injustice, he goes and he does what he has to do. The problem is that also as a father, I'm very, very scared that something will happen to him. But how could I tell him, don't do that? I can tell him, please be cautious, please take care. Or perhaps that day they're going to shoot. Don't go that day. I mean, you can do those things. But how can you answer that boy if you yourself have lived your whole life putting your life on the line?
Well, you knew Rodrigo Rojas, who is the 19-year-old Chilean who had been living with his mother in Maryland, and he went down to Chile, and he was beaten and then burned to death by soldiers there.
That's right.
You had pointed out in your New York Times article that one of the purposes you thought of that beating and killing was to set an example of what might happen to you if you were a young person not on the streets or participating in any kind of protest.
I think that was the Washington Post op-ed.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
I think in that Washington Post op-ed I said, yes, you know, you're making an example of somebody. After all, that is the ultimate terror. Terror is doing something publicly, but then it becomes private inside you. You become, in a sense, you have the burning is happening inside you. This very moment, something is burning inside me. And I don't want my friends, or I don't want myself to be burnt. So it's clear that they made an example of somebody. Now, they made a mistake because they picked up a D.C. boy. If they had picked up any Santiago kid, nobody would have heard of it.
Did it have the kind of chilling effect on your family that you think the soldiers would have liked it to have?
I don't know. You know, in my case, I'll tell you, it has made me angrier than I've ever been angry, and I'm very, very angry during these years. I mean, I haven't stopped since I've heard about this. On the other hand, you know, I've just written the Village Voice that I could have gone down that night he was there. I could have gone down to the hospital to try to save him, and I didn't. I wasn't able to do it. I was scared because there were troops in the street, and there were bullets all over the place, and there were barricades, and there were spikes, and the police were checking documents and all this. And, you know, so that does intimidate you. You are intimidated. And anybody who says he isn't or she isn't, I think that they're lying. That doesn't mean you don't do things. It means that to do things is very difficult.
Do you think that the climate has changed much since your last visit to Chile in terms of the opposition or the repression?
The climate has changed in both senses. We now have a very strong opposition. The opposition is joined in a thing called the Civilian Assembly. It represents most of the millions of Chileans who work, merchants, trade union people, truck drivers, doctors, lawyers, students, professors, everybody. Anybody who's been, in fact, elected by real people, they're on that committee, on that Civilian Assembly. They called a very successful strike of 48 hours a couple of weeks ago. And most of them are in jail now, the leaders of that Civilian Assembly. So now we have to see if their replacements are going to keep on going. And my impression is they are going to keep on going. Nothing is going to stop the people of Chile from going on. But the point is that repression has also got much, much worse. I mean, we are 13 years after the coup. So General Pinochet by now should have had more than enough time to root out everything, eradicate everybody, terrorize everybody. And here you have more and more people against him. So it's clear that we have more resistance and we have more repression, and that leads to more conflict. That's what's in store for Chile in the next couple of years.
Since you've returned to the States, you've been writing articles for newspapers and magazines about the climate of repression in Chile. Do you feel confident that you're going to be let in next year when you want to return?
Well, if they don't let me in, I can promise them a scandal. I have been on Nightline. I'm going to be on the David Brinkley Show. I have been on CBS Evening News. I write for the major newspapers in this country. I speak for the major radios. If General Pinochet doesn't let me in, I will be on there again, except I will be denouncing him for not letting me back, only because I am telling the truth. And I will challenge that government to put me on trial for what I've said, prove that what I've said is wrong, illegal, a lie. But they can't do that because I'm telling the truth. So I'm going back unless General Pinochet decides otherwise. And if he decides otherwise, he'd better watch out.
Do you have any family in Chile now?
We've got a lot of family in Chile, but not immediate. In other words, my wife and two kids are outside with me.
So they travel, you all travel together?
Well, my eldest kid is in Berkeley, and the youngest one always travels with us.
Yeah. Right. You're still working on a 6 months in the States, 6 months in Chile arrangement?
That's sort of the arrangement I'm working on. I'd rather have an arrangement which would allow me to go back to Chile definitely. Let's see if we can manage that.
It must have been very disorienting for you to leave.
It was, you know. I really wanted to stay back there. I wanted to be with my friends. I would even, in a sense, I'm not nostalgic for jail, but I mean, it hurts me to think my friends are in jail, the most decent people in the jail, and the people who have them in jail are just a bunch of criminals. It just hurts me to think of that. It hurts to think that I wasn't there for the funeral of Rodrigo Rojas and of so many other things that you feel are your community. On the other hand, let me say I think I have never felt this valuable before, because just by a strange coincidence, I was there when all this horror happened, and I came out of the country to be a writer in residence at IPS, Institute for Policy Studies, for a month here in Washington. I had a lot of literary things that I had to do, and I'm trying to do, but I found myself forced into the spotlight, and, well, if that's what I have to do, I have to do. I just wish, you know, among other things, that General Pinochet would resign so I could get out of the spotlight and get back into my own room so I could write a bit more.